To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is Aaron Carnes, the host of this podcast. After 4.5 years of weekly episodes, we are ready to stop creating In Defense of Ska. The podcast was meant to be a promotional push for my book In Defense of Ska, and it wound up taking on a life of its own. While Adam and I both love what we've accomplished with this podcast, we both feel compelled to focus our creative output elsewhere. The episodes we recorded remain evergreen, and we invite you to explore our back catalog, which will remain online thanks to the Consequence Podcast Network. I am working diligently on a new book, a novel called Little Black Book of Death. It's not ska-related, but it has a strong musical component. I also have a punk-themed script in the works. Adam is working on new music for Omnigon. We invite you to follow our respective projects and look forward to what the future holds. To keep in touch with my writing, follow me on Substack. That's aaroncarnes.substack.com. You can follow Omnigon on their social media accounts. Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find among their listeners. I'm your co-host Adam Davis of the bands Omnigon and Link 80, and joining me now is renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes, and our editor and the founder of, is that the right way to say it? Founder of Ska Punk International Records, Chris Reeves.
I did found it.
I don't know what's your title, Chris?
Yeah, what's your title, Chris?
When I have to officially write it, like when I sign, like, you know, vinyl order forms and stuff, I just put owner, I guess.
Okay, that works. And what are we going to talk about today, Aaron?
All right, this is a special episode. We're going to talk about Coachella because it is a ska year. This is Scachella. Everyone's talking about the No Doubt performance and the Sublime performance. And I got a few articles here. Listen to this.
Ska is back. Finally.
So SF Gate, there's a little clip in here that says, ska has been a fitting presence at the festival's second day and with the internet as lovingly dubbed Scachella. The internet. And then this place called Consequence, which I heard they have like a really great podcast network. They said they had a newsletter that said, did ska save Coachella?
I'm familiar. I saw it.
Yeah. So everyone's talking about it and yeah, people are saying ska's back and all this and that, but I want to look at this. Is 2024 the most ska Coachella has ever been? This is my first question.
Well, I mean, we had No Doubt, we had Sublime,
yeah,
and we had Aquabats. What have we had other years?
Well, and we'll just add Vampire Weekend to the list of this year
because
they, you know, they played a few ska songs. I went back and looked at all of the previous years of Coachella to see how this held up from a ska point of view.
Okay.
So no ska for the first 10 years. Then we get to 2010, the specials, RX Bandits, also Vampire Weekend. 2011, Aquabats, Don Letts, and I'm also going to include Gogo Bordello.
Sure.
2012, we got Madness, Jimmy Cliff, and Tim Armstrong.
Oh.
Look at this. 2013, look at this.
Yeah, this is the one.
This is the one. Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra.
Yeah.
Lee Scratch Perry, The Selector. There's a band called Wild Bell that has some reggae and ska influences. Vampire Weekend, we're throwing them in again. And I'm also going to throw in Cafe Tacuba because they have some ska songs.
Yeah.
2014, we got Fishbone. 2015, no ska. Boo. 2016, yeah, boo. 2016, Rancid. 2017, we got Interrupters, Toots and the Maytals. 2018, nothing. But then we got 2019, Interrupters again. 2020 and 2021 got canceled because something happened. I think it was called COVID. 2022 basically took on the lineup that was going to be 2020. Not really any ska. We had the Danny Elfman performance, so maybe that we'll consider that the ska performance.
Didn't he play some Boingo?
He did everything from his career.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 2023 we had Los Fabulosos Cadillacs.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
And we had a reggae band called Stick Figure. So what I'm getting at here is this is not a weird thing for Coachella to have ska.
Definitely.
They've had ska pretty consistently for the last, what are we saying here, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, and it makes sense, too. The founder, Paul, is...
Yeah, from Golden Voice, right?
From Golden Voice.
Yeah.
In an article I read, it says that he got his start booking ska shows in Pomona. And I think he managed Aquabats for a bit. So there's, you know, there's some clear ska in his past.
Yeah, didn't Golden Voice like either co or just fully put out Fury of the Aquabats or Return of the Aquabats? I don't know.
Yeah,
the second one, the one with Super Red.
Two records of theirs, I believe. So this is not like this is not the most ska year, but it is the year everyone's talking about the ska at Coachella. So this is kind of what I wanted to look at for this episode. Why is 2024 the year that people are talking about ska at Coachella? And we'll start by looking at the sets of the bands that are in the ska genre to kind of get a sense of what's going on here. So let's start with Vampire Weekend. Probably my favorite ska moment happened during their set. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Of course I do.
Yeah, what's that?
The Skank and Pickles shirt the drummer was wearing.
So the drummer is wearing a classic Skank and Pickles shirt. Now, so here's something I've been wondering, and I'm curious your guys' opinion. When a band plays Coachella, they probably, do you think they're thinking about the fact that whatever they're wearing is going to be noticed and is possibly going to make a statement?
I would have to think so. I mean, I know that, like, I'm playing much smaller spaces than Coachella, and I definitely think about what I'm wearing for a show.
Yeah, I don't even play, but when I'm like hosting a show, I'm thinking about what I'm wearing. So it's hard to imagine anyone on a stage like that would not think about it.
So he picked out his Skank and Pickle shirt. He must have been thinking that ska fans, Skank and Pickle fans were going to notice.
What we're really going to need to find out is, did he go watch the Aquabat set?
Did he? Yeah.
Yeah, just in there along with Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah.
Was he one of the characters?
Was he in one of the costumes?
Yeah.
We know it wasn't Tara, so maybe he was in there. For those of you who don't know, Tara Hahn of Half Past Two was at one point Broby.
And if you want to hear the whole story, sign up to the In Defense of Ska Patreon.
Nice plug.
Yeah, nice plug. They also played, so Vampire Weekend played A-Punk, which is ska-ish, and they played Holiday, which is pretty much straight up a ska song.
Yeah, that just sounded like a ska song for sure.
Yeah.
So they've been pretty coy about their ska influences for a good chunk of their career, but when they released their new record, they did their own podcast, and they said that they had intended Holiday to be them trying to kick off the fourth wave of ska.
Yeah. That podcast was bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, hearing them like just talk about that openly was like, what world am I in right now?
Yeah, because that's always been kind of a dirty little secret for them.
Right.
It has. And that's why I'm curious about the choice to wear a Skank and Pickles shirt at Coachella. Feels like, okay, we're finally comfortable to start revealing our ska past. So they talk about it openly on this podcast, and then the drummer wears it.
Yeah.
Aware that people are going to like share photos of it on social media.
In addition to that, they have Voodoo Glow Skulls and the English Beat opening for them.
Yeah, they're mm-hmm. just like straight up just booking bands that they like. And
so, yeah.
The story that I'm being told is that they just said, these are the bands we want. It wasn't anyone outside of them as well, is what I've been told.
Well, I can't imagine anybody like in their management or label or, you know, in any kind of like production team being like, you got to book Voodoo Glow Skulls. Are you crazy?
Because English Beat makes sense, but Voodoo Glow Skulls is like pretty left of center for them.
So another little side thing about the Vampire Weekend set, they had a Paris Hilton come on stage. Now, as far as I'm concerned, missed opportunity. They just had her play cornhole or whatever. Missed right. opportunity. They could have had her play her song "Stars Are Blind," which is her yes. ska song. Yeah,
yeah. They really blew it on that one. They blew that one. Yeah.
I thought that was what was going to happen at first.
Could you imagine how insane that would have been if like Paris Hilton gets on stage with Vampire Weekend and just goes into the ska song?
Yeah. That would have been amazing.
I wish.
Why did they bring out the guy in the Abraham Lincoln costume though?
Well, Paris had to play somebody.
Yeah, but why Abraham Lincoln?
Why not Abraham
Lincoln? Sure. Okay.
All right, so Aquabats. Aquabats, this is their second time at Coachella. They had a pretty good set because they had the Yo Gabba Gabba characters. They had the video. All the video behind them was from all their various shows, or you know, I assume it's from stuff they've already filmed. They opened with a pool party. They had the beach balls everywhere. Seemed like a lot of fun. I'm sure for like that crowd, that would have been like a lot of wholesome fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and didn't they... go right into Super Rad too.
Yeah, second song,
Super Rad. I was looking at each song, and it's like I would say half or more than half were ska songs.
I'd say a good 70% were ska yeah. songs.
And here's the thing that surprised me. I mean, I haven't been paying close attention to Aquabats records, but they played two songs. They said this song's off our new record. They did that twice. Both of those songs ska. So I was unaware of them returning to ska.
Yeah, I didn't listen to the new record because I'm not as into them anymore, but I've heard people talking about that they kind of did some ska again, but I didn't think it was like that. I thought it was like one or something, so I guess it's a lot. I don't know. They definitely played a lot of ska in that set.
It was great when they had ska songs and they had the full horn section, but I also dug it when they did their non-ska songs and then the horn players had to figure out what to do and they just became dancing guys.
Well, they also did a lot of backup vocals. That was the other thing that I was noticing that I thought was great, because especially in a room or space like that, like you could tell that their singer Christian was getting winded like the first two songs. Like, cause he's running around, he's kicking beach balls, he's singing, and it helps to have the horn players like jump in on the big chorus parts, give him a little bit of breathing room. I also noticed they had an auxiliary guitar player, which I don't know is that person full time in the band? I only knew of Eagle Bones being their guitar player.
Yeah, I don't think so. I haven't seen them since 2012, but
yeah,
it's always just been one guitar.
Yeah. And then I thought it was a really smart move, like almost every single song to be throwing inflatables out into the audience.
Oh, dude, the inflatable pizza.
The inflatable pizza were great. The banter about the guy on the pizza. Like, they're like, get that middle-aged guy off the pizza. And then, oh, you're not middle-aged? Well, you need to eat better, sir. Like, I thought that was really great. And then also, you know, at first I was a little bit annoyed by the, you know, I don't like when a singer goes, you know, oh, dance, dance, it's time to dance. But it seemed to be working because I noticed at one point about midway through the set, he was like, everybody jump. And everybody was actually jumping at a big festival. So, you know, maybe I need to check myself then.
I mean, it was a different room, but him saying that worked way better than when any other band did it.
Yeah.
Now, this might be like an old guy question, but old guy who's never been to Coachella question. But do you think like that the people in that room were on drugs? And do you think that they were having a totally spiritual experience seeing Aquabats?
I'll put an extra layer onto that even and say most of the people who are the right age to be going to Coachella grew up watching Yo Gabba Gabba.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so if they were on drugs, they were having an especially surreal experience because their friends from childhood, from watching the Aquabats Super Show and Yo Gabba Gabba, were there on stage while they're tripping balls.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So that had to have been a pretty special experience for some people.
Yeah. There's 100% chance most of that room was at least drunk, but very high.
Yeah.
When I've been at other festivals and there was like Cuckoo Kangaroo were playing at this festival in Austin once and they played at like 8 p.m. and it was just like everyone there totally trash. They had a totally different kind of set. They had like drinking games and all types of stuff during the set. And it was incredible. One of the best things I've ever been part of. Like I could barely stand up and I was having the best time. They took out like the parachute thing and I can only imagine that that's exactly what that Aquabats room was like. That would have been great, to be honest. As much as I'm not that into them anymore, I would have totally done that.
Yeah.
All right. So Sublime, let's talk about Sublime set. Pretty much solid ska and reggae set. I mean, Sublime actually has a pretty diverse catalog, but this was strictly, I would say strictly ska and reggae with a few exceptions.
Yep. And it even leaned pretty heavily ska punk.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
like the first song, straight up ska punk song.
Yeah, we had Wrong Way, Date Rape, Same in the End. It was, yeah, there was definitely quite a bit of ska punk in there. How did you guys feel they did overall? Like, obviously, this is, Jacob has done, Bradley's son has done, I think, one show before this. And now his, you know, he's playing at Coachella, which is a huge show. The guys in the band, I mean, they've been doing it off and on with Sublime or Throne, but it's still a different experience, I think.
Yeah.
I thought overall it was good. I think probably Jacob was probably a lot of pressure. He was probably pretty nervous, but I think he handled it well. And there was definitely moments when he was hitting the songs right where he sounded identical to his dad.
Yeah.
It was a little eerie.
Yeah. On Badfish, I just thought I was listening to dad. Like it even just sounded like I don't think all of us had that way, but Badfish just sounded like the original recording, which was insane.
Yeah. And the few little flubs that I noticed could really be chalked up to the fact that it was second show and it's in front of that many people. There was one part where I feel like he got lost in the lyrics and I saw him looking around at the rest of the band. I think it was maybe the last half of Date Rape. But like, I think it was a smart move to have a second guitar player to cover all the leads. I think it was a smart move for him to just take off the guitar and sing for a song. And the few vocal things that I noticed, I bet he'll hit this next weekend. Mm-hmm. Because one thing I also noticed was that it looked like he was holding back for the first third of the set vocally, like not really dropping into like that growlier register for some of the vocal parts that kind of require him. But he did do it later in the set. So I think it was just a pacing issue. And I think that coming into it this weekend, I think it'll be a lot stronger.
Yeah. And so in terms of the original members, Bud and Eric, I was impressed that they, especially the drummer, the speed of which they were playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always easy when you get to your 50s or your late 40s or however old they are. to continue to be able to play songs, ska punk or punk songs at that speed. And I felt like they were killing it.
Yeah, it sounded similar to the recordings. It didn't sound like what you hear a lot of older bands do, where they'll change the key or play things slower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Rome, if I'm remembering right, they weren't really playing a lot of the punkier stuff, right? It was more like just like the straight up reggae stuff and like more like jamming. I never saw them, but I've seen a lot of videos, so
I'm
totally wrong.
My ska confession is I've never seen them, heard them. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Anything
I'm in the same page. I've never dabbled with any of the Sublime with Rome stuff.
All the videos I've seen, it's more like a jam band that plays the Sublime hits is my impression of it.
Sure. Okay.
Again, I could be totally wrong, but I guess I'm the most qualified of the three of us.
Okay.
Yes, you are.
That's why you're here.
When they immediately started playing the faster stuff, I was like, oh, shit. Like, ooh, okay, we're doing this. I was not really even wanting to see their set because I kind of thought it was just going to be that, but with Jacob. And it wasn't. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Though I will differ with you, Adam. I didn't really like him taking the guitar off. I felt like that was awkward. I felt like that's not really... I feel like that didn't really work yet, but it'll get into it.
Yeah.
My favorite little piece of banter he did, Jacob, is when they went into Summertime, he pretended that Lana Del Rey was going to come join them. And I legit cool. Cause she that was playing the festival. Yeah.
Yeah. That was really,
yeah, that was a good one. So Jacob, if you're listening, good job. I like that.
That actually faked me out throughout the rest of the stuff I watched, is when other bands would start to say someone was coming out or whatever, I didn't believe it until I saw them. Like, we're about to get to it, but when that happened with No Doubt, I was like, that's not happening. Oh, it is happening.
Okay, yeah, let's go to No Doubt.
Wait, before we go to No Doubt,
okay,
we should probably go to commercial.
All right, so we'll be right back after this.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
We're back and we're ready to dive into No Doubt set.
Let's do this.
Okay, so first off, No Doubt, in my opinion, did a really, really, really good job, and they seem like they were really into it. They were totally enjoying themselves. Gwen seemed like she was totally in her element. And then Tony was like, he had the biggest smile on his face.
Yeah, Tony was having the best time.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Now, they played stuff from all over their catalog. Some of it was like straight up ska stuff, like Total Hate. But some of their stuff that was... I don't know, Tragic Kingdom, not quite ska. They made it sound a little more ska.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah.
Let me see. There's a couple of good examples.
Can I tell you my favorite one? I don't
mean
to ruin your notes. Underneath it all, they added a ska break in the bridge.
Yeah, that was one of them. That was one of them.
Yeah, it's a song I'm not that into. So I was actually just like, I watched it live, and I went. Like when that song started, like, okay, that's fine. So I went in the other room to get a drink, it's water, and I hear like actual upstrokes, like, what is happening? I ran in the other room. That was cool.
Yeah, that was one. And then the other one was Different People, which is kind of an album cut from Tragic Kingdom. That song's not like super fresh on my brain. And I was watching them and I was hearing like some ska elements, and I was like, I don't remember there being ska elements on the record, let alone this song. So I had to go back and listen and double check it. And sure enough, there was not ska on that they added the ska to that song.
Yeah. I mean, I think that song is awesome. When they started that song, I was surprised because I don't even remember that happening live very much, like back in the day, unless it was like the Tragic Kingdom tour. But after Return of Saturn and on, I don't think they play that live. So I was like, I mean, but that was if I'm remembering right, after Total Hate. And when Total Hate happened, I was like, oh, all bets are off now. Like, who knows what they're going to do, actually. I never would have thought they would do that.
Yeah, so they, and Gwen and Tony seemed to really, and the horn players, they were hardcore skanking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So One Step Beyond, obviously, they covered Madness, One Step Beyond. Were you guys surprised that they played that song?
I was pretty blown away. And it was a good choice. They used that song for a costume change for Gwen. And knowing the reaction that song got when Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra did it at Supernova. Oh,
that was so sick.
Like, insane. Like, I can only imagine what it was like, even if you had no reference to ska. If you were not a Madness fan and they started playing that song, you could see people that didn't know what to do, who were just getting into it, because that song is undeniably a dance track.
Yeah. They played it a little slower.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's fine.
Well, I feel like in a stadium like that, playing fast, playing really frenetic, gets kind of lost in all the echo and reverb of a space like that. So I think playing it a little slower is probably the move. Plus, they're also trying to fill time,
exactly.
Give Gwen time to switch into a different outfit, and then move on to the next song. I liked also that they moved the drum out to the the end of that runway, so they could all perform out there for that part. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was cool because they came up through that and. I was like, okay, I mean, that's fun. But they started with Hella Good, and I was like, okay, well, that's what this set is going to be like. Not my favorite song, but, you know, they start playing ska pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, second song.
Yeah, so then when they come back, like, what are we even doing now? Like, why are we back out here? And it was, like, I legitimately was, like, my jaw, like, was like, we're really playing Madness on this? Like, wow. I texted many people like, holy shit. I was really shocked.
And so additionally, there was a couple moments where they had interlude music over the loudspeaker.
Oh yeah. The videos.
And so first time it was after Hella Good going into Sunday Morning. And it's just a ska song. And they had like checkers on the screen. And then after they played One Step Beyond, they played, they played one more song and then they went back to the main stage and it was a ska song that walked them over to the main stage.
Right. Yeah.
So Olivia Rodrigo joined the band for Bathwater. So that song has reggae and ska elements.
Mm-hmm.
Not, that's not straight up, but it does have the elements. And, you know, Gwen and her, they were skanking.
Yep.
They definitely were.
So Olivia, yeah, I'm a fan of Olivia. She's definitely pulling from a lot of like stuff, new wave, emo. She's definitely pulling from all these things that were around at the same time as ska. So now we have to wonder, are we going to see Olivia Rodrigo do some ska?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, I'm a huge fan of when she gets like super grungy. Mm-hmm. And like on my label, we've even put out a couple Scolivia Rodrigo covers, mm-hmm. and it works incredibly well. So I think this is what the world needs. We really need her to actually do it.
Well, she's said some pretty glowing things about Gwen Stefani and No Doubt. And she wore a shirt that says, I love ND.
Yeah. And it looked like her own shirt. Like it looks like it's like older, like it's seen some shit. So
if she's an actual fan of No Doubt, I mean, it's not like it's unknown to her, that music and the power of that music. So
I read an interview, though, that bums me out a little in terms of this conquest, that she said Return of Saturn is her favorite No Doubt album, which is like their least ska one. Mm. So, but the song she did is not from that album.
Yeah.
So she's clearly into all of them.
Yeah. Maybe that answer has changed now.
Right.
Yeah, maybe it's Beacon Street now.
Well, I don't know. I hope that's not anyone's favorite.
So So, okay. And so let's just a little side tangent. I want to just mention the Blur set, because that's also something that's been getting a lot of talk. Did you guys watch any of that? Did you guys watch the girls?
Yeah, girls I watched the performance of Girls and Boys. His vocal sounded so bad.
Yeah, and him just complaining that the crowd weren't going hard.
Yeah, you might as well sing because we're not coming back, or whatever he says. Yeah.
Yeah. My suggestion for Damon is come back, do a cover of Nightclub. It'll kill. Will kill.
That's true, actually.
Yeah. And then while you're at it, come do the In Defense of Ska podcast. I know you're a fan of the Specials. Talk to us.
Hell yeah.
All right. So I want to talk about why this year is getting so much attention as the Ska year. So I have a couple thoughts. So we'll start with the first line of thinking that I have. The first one is that there is special timing related to No Doubt and Sublime. So yes, 2013, we had Tokyo Ska Paradise. We had the Selector, but I don't know that there was anything special happening with those bands, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were just playing.
Yeah, they were just there.
Sublime, on the surface, Sublime seems like a bigger deal because now we have them getting back together with Bradley's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did a good job, you know. And it sounds like they're going to continue on. No Doubt. I was a little unsure at first why it was such a big deal that they were playing again, because it had only been 9 years. You know, 9 years doesn't seem that special when a band's been like started in like the late 80s, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But no, I understand why it was a big deal now. The reason it's a big deal now is because in these last 9 years, Gwen has become a bigger, more mainstream figure than she ever has before.
I think it's more than that.
Okay, so there is that element. She's been doing The Voice. She's like on tabloids or whatever because of what's his name, Blake. But what else is there, in your opinion?
Well, she's gotten like more famous in new ways.
Yeah, to like a main mainstream audience.
Right, yeah. And to me, what I've heard people say in like our scene is that it's like Gwen is just not the person who like was doing all this stuff before. Like the videos that you would see of like early No Doubt era, Tragic Kingdom era, like that is not the same person. Like you could see like interviews where she seemed to be like skirting around the Ska era, and she would like not talk about her bandmates and all these things that seemed to be on purpose. And so for many people, me included, it was like, oh, she hasn't forgotten about this stuff. She's still willing to do it. And she just, I guess, was doing other shit, I guess. But it was cool that it was like, great. That's still like, she hasn't like forgotten her roots, for a better way of saying it. So that's why it was cool, in my opinion. And why I didn't think they would really lean in that much, but just hearing that they would even play together at all, because you can even like find rumors that like, they don't even like each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it would stand a reason that they would just never play again. So the fact that they are at all was kind of like, oh, I wonder what that's going to be like.
Yeah, I mean, so a No Doubt reunion could have been a number of things. I mean, you expect them to sort of touch on different eras and stuff, but they really consciously leaned more into ska than I think was required of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's interesting. And so why do you think they did that? They didn't need to do that. I'm sure nobody was telling them to do that. Is it just because it actually means something to them and that's it? Or did they feel like important? It was important to make it clear that they were still in touch with those roots, or did they feel like it was a good way to come back to be playing more ska and stuff? Anna, what are your guys' thoughts about why they leaned into ska so much?
I know that my perception of the band for a long time was that they had kind of ceased being a ska band, like very, very long ago. But then I had to reassess that during this set and be like, no, this is still very much a ska band. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I had that perception, that there were probably a lot of people that had that perception, and they probably heard that a lot, that like, oh, you guys aren't a ska band anymore. You're just a stadium rock band. And I'm sure that that was probably something where they were like, no, we are a ska band. Like, we started as a ska band. We play ska. Like, so why not put that at the forefront?
I know what I want to believe why it happened. Uh-huh. I want to believe that I don't believe that any of them, maybe Tony or like Tom or Adrian or something, is aware of some of the like top of the pyramid of what's happening, maybe like the Interrupters or something. But I'm sure it's more likely that someone like a manager or something is like, you know, hey, there's a little bit more ska stuff happening now than when you last played. Maybe you should think about some more. And they all went, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. That'd be fun. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to believe.
Well, I mean, is it a coincidence that Vampire Weekend returns? They're tipping their hat to ska more than they ever have. Aquabats played more ska than I expected them to play. Sublime leaned really heavy into ska and reggae, and No Doubt played more ska than I anticipated. It seems to be too much of a coincidence that every single one of these bands approach their set this way. Either they are at an age where they want to get back into their roots, or they're aware of the fact that culture is more accepting of this now than it was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. So that's what I want to believe. The evidence is there. That makes me feel fine with believing that. But I know that it's probably unlikely. I'm not stupid. I know that, like, yeah, I'm shipping out a bunch of shit, but I know it's not so much that it would be the attention of them.
Oh, you've never shipped a record to someone named Gwen Stefani?
No, but someone named Tony K sure did order a record. No, but I mean, like, obviously, like, Bad Time and, like I said, like Interrupters, like there's so much happening that it's possible, but I'm not stupid. I know that like they live in like a different world, but there's so much of it at one time that it seems impossible that there's not some awareness on a larger scale, right?
I mean, you know, famous people that live in bubbles, they have the internet and algorithms suggest things. So,
right. That's what I'm saying.
Do you think they've listened to the show, Aaron?
Totally.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah. If you're listening to the show, if you're in No Doubt and you're listening to the show, come on the show. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, and also, I'm sorry that I said I didn't like Beacon Street, if you're listening.
He's just our editor, by the way, so don't.
You can reach out to us at indefenseofska@gmail.com.
Yes, that's the email. It's a real email for this podcast. If you're in No Doubt, please email us. So I want to piggyback just a little bit off what Adam's saying. I had a very similar thought about them as a ska band, because I have thoughts and opinions about like them being a ska band and then not being a ska band and Tragic Kingdom not really being a ska record. But yeah, I could really see how not only were they in very obvious ways a ska band when they played ska, but I was really listening to the non-ska songs as being coming from a band that learned music through playing ska. Mm-hmm. And so some of these songs were not ska, but you could hear it, or you kind of got the sense of it, because that's what their music, you know, that their musical foundation was. So that I really kind of took in their set with that perspective.
Yeah, there's really only a few that they played that felt just like total pop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So anyways, I think in conclusion, I think we're saying that No Doubt is a ska band.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Okay, so for the second week, the same bands are playing, right? same second weekend. Are there any, what hopes do we have for these bands this coming weekend? What do we want to see?
Here's what I hope No Doubt does. Mm-hmm. I want them to say we're a ska band on stage.
That'd be amazing.
That's what I want. That's my hope. Go ahead.
What if they said Aaron Carnes and then said your home address on stage?
If I was going to be doxxed, that would be the way to be doxxed.
My hope for this set is when Sublime plays, I hope that Jacob doesn't do that stupid trumpet impression again. I hope he actually just goes and asks a horn player from one of these other bands, maybe one of the horn players in No Doubt, and just goes, hey, can you just play on this song? Like, they definitely have, like, if it's a money thing, I'm sure they have the money to pay him to come out and play one song.
Well, what I thought you were going to say, that it seemed like an obvious thing that they would do now. It didn't seem obvious going into the weekend, but now that Gwen and Jacob would do Saw Red.
Sure, that too.
I mean, they went all the way back to Total Hate. I mean, it's right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be awesome. I would be into that. So is that your hope, or did you have a different hope?
Well, my hope is that they're going to go on and be like, Skopunk International is my favorite label. But that's not really. So yeah, I would like to see video of Saw Red with Gwen and Jacob. That would be so cool.
Okay. Well, I think that concludes our Ska-cella episode. Since we've already shown that Ska has been a part of Coachella for the last 15 years, who do we think or hope are going to be playing Coachella next year?
Cat Bite.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if No Doubt goes on tour, who do we hope is main support?
Cat Bite. Yeah. All right. Yeah,
they're the ones primed for this. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. And then also, I hope they bring like Inspector's doing a ton of shows, or bring back Scott Pera, or like do another one of those like international bands. Like, that's so cool when they do that. Like, keep going.
Yeah. Panteon Rococo, I don't think I've ever played. So let's get Panteon Rococo.
Yeah, that'd be incredible.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever.